You're listening to Face Off, episode 23, recorded June 27th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com or follow us by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow. All right, Mark. So I guess the big news this week that we wanted to kind of talk about and follow up on is Google Voice is actually opening up massive amounts of invites.
Yeah. We've been excited about this. It was episode 9. We talked about it. In another earlier episode, we mentioned Grand Central before they changed to Google Voice. And I have been absolutely excited for this service to come out.
You're rather smitten.
It's been in beta for, I think, about 2 years. And ever since it started the beta, I've been like, I want in, you know. And last night, I finally got an invite. Sending invites out. So if you guys have been waiting for an invite, you know, since we last talked about it, you know, signed up for an invite, you know, check your emails. They've been sending them out.
Yeah, I have yet to receive mine, so boo-hoo.
Well, you'll get one. You know, I got to play with it a little bit last night, and, you know, I'm happy with it.
So, I mean, what are some of the killer features that you're really impressed with, Mark?
I mean, just having a phone number you can give out to anyone and not really worry about it, you know? Yeah, like, I can put this, you know, number in my email and give it out to the world. And if people, you know, that I don't like calling me, start calling me, I just block them. Mm-hmm. No, I have complete control. Being able to set, you know, specific features for certain people. Like if you're my friend, you know, just ring my cell phone any time of the day. Or if you're, you know, not a friend, you're just like a colleague or something, you know, don't allow at certain hours, you know, mm-hmm. Do not disturb.
Definitely.
You know, those kind of features are really neat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the phone features are really cool, but the truth is, I mean, even the one phone number is cool, but even for my existing phone number, what I want and what I like about this is the integration between the phone and the computer. I detest phones, especially auditory things like voicemails, phone calls. I really hate them. I love text messaging. Yeah. Even things like visual voicemail that you can get on a lot of phones these days is helpful, but I really like the fact that I use my computer with this. I'm really fast with a keyboard and mouse. That's the interface I'm the most comfortable with. I don't like having to listen to a menu of options and then pressing 5 and then having to listen to them again.
Just going to say that. Like, if you've got 5 voicemails and you want to listen to the third one, it's like skip, skip, skip. And
exactly. And then you're like, oh, crap, I skipped one too far. Now I got to figure out what button goes back. And you hit star and it's like all of a sudden you're signed out. And you're like, well, what the
hell? So then you got to hang up, call back again, and it's just a big hassle.
Yeah, this, I mean, so.
So, I mean, with this, if somebody calls in and leaves a voicemail, it'll actually transcribe what it is and text you.
Mm-hmm.
You can also have it set up to email you an MP3 of that message. So, I mean,
You can share your voicemails through by emailing it. You can download just the MP3, or you can even embed it in, you know, websites or your signature and stuff like that, which is great for something like Face Off. This is exactly, I mean, we're hoping, I mean, I'm glad you put Face Off in the invite list, but this is exactly what we want for people to be able to call in with questions. That is one problem, is voice over the computer. The interface of the computer of managing voice is very nice, but voice over the computer can be really inconsistent, mm-hmm. kind of clunky, whereas a phone is not. So this is a great integration. Like for us, you know, we can have people call in, leave a voicemail with a question or a suggestion, play it over the air really easily without funky, you know, audio adapters and stuff through the mixer.
Right. For Face Off, if we wanted somebody to record a question and send it in, they'd have to hook up their mic, make sure their mic levels are all right.
Yeah.
With Google Voice, they can just call our phone number and leave a message. It's going to be more consistent. The volume's going to be the same. It's going to be about the same quality. Granted, it won't be, you know, mic quality, but it'll be the same. It'll sound like a caller and it'll sound like a question.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to worry about some dude with, you know, a $2 microphone from Walmart that's going to sound like junk.
And it's going to be convenient for us because we're going to have an MP3 coming into our email. All we have to do is download it, import it into our post-production on our show, and it's in our show. So it's going to be great for Faceoff. For but it's great for everyone, really.
Yeah, as
I mean,
a regular user, I'm really excited about it.
So let me give you what I think is really awesome about this service for some, not necessarily me because I don't have very many international callers, but for people that want to call internationally on the go, you know, right for cheap. Right now you have Skype, but you have to be attached to a computer or have some sort of a smartphone that's got maybe Skype enabled, or some sort of VoIP solution to get overseas.
Some sort of VoIP solution, yep.
With this, what you would do is, like, let's say you wanted to call somebody in Germany, you would go to the Google Voice website and just type in, or you don't have to go to the Google Voice website, but this is one way you can do it. You can go to the Google Voice website, type in your phone, the phone number you want to go in Germany, and then Google Voice will call your cell phone and hook up the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So for your phone and your cell phone company, it looks like you're just dialing a domestic phone call or a domestic number, so which is a domestic call that's routed over VoIP through Google Voice.
Yep.
So basically, instead of paying like $1.50 a minute to dial Germany, you're paying 10 cents or, you know, whatever the going rate is for VoIP.
Yeah, exactly.
This is convenient because up until now, you've pretty much had to use something like Skype in order to do that, which kind of involves a computer. You know, you got to hook up a mic. You know, you probably want to have headphones so you don't echo back and forth.
Good,
you know, you have all that kind of
good internet
stuff going.
You know, you have to have good internet.
You got to, I mean, you got to make sure that person's, you know, even available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad that they added some things like the ability to have it call your phone and pick up and then connect. Because I was thinking, who carries? I don't think in phone numbers anymore. The cell phone age doesn't have me think in phone numbers. It has me think in context, in people. I go to a person's name, I hit send, it calls them. And I thought, if Google Voice is going to make me call them and then dial in the number, man, I'll never ever use it.
Right.
But the fact that I can use my computer to set up the call and then just all I have to do is answer and connect, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Now, you might be saying, well, I'm not going to have my computer. Well, if I had my computer, I could just use Skype. Or, you know, I'm not always going to have my computer to call Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can call your own Google number and it'll route you through your phone. So you,
yeah.
You could be sitting on a train and call Germany through VoIP, which is just awesome, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No one would think
that's something that's new. I guess this is what at least that I've seen. This is something new that Google Voice is the only thing that has something like that.
Yeah. Another really cool feature I want to talk about is you can send and receive SMSs to your Google Voice account again, all through your computer. The one thing I like about Google Voice and what I want is I want I want a choice. I want either or. I want, if I'm at my computer, I want to use that because that's the easiest, quickest interface. But I don't, like with Skype, then I'm tied to my computer. I can't go. But with this, it's either or. If I have to use it and it's even a little clunky to use it over the phone, you know, audio interface, I have that choice and I really like that. So, like, I mean, I've said forever, if you can give me a PDA or an iPod Touch that has a cellular data plan and text messaging, I don't even want calls. I don't even want voicemail. I'd be the happiest guy in the world because I hate talking on the phone. And so this is great. It's like an interface for people. You know, they can SMS you and it'll forward to your phone, so you can go to your phone and get it. Plus, keep a record of it at Google. So, I mean, like with my phone, a lot of the times I have to erase all my text messages. This will be cool because it'll keep a record of all of them. I can reply through my computer, which is a much faster keyboard interface than my phone.
You can manage it just like email. Like you can set up groups. Like this group of people can get directly to me. This one goes to my spam. You know,
exactly.
You can literally say, like, this group of people, if they call me, give them a message that says my phone number has been disconnected.
Yeah.
You know, that you just don't see that. And, I mean, you can't call Verizon and start saying, I want to block this guy. He's annoying.
Yeah.
They won't do it for
no.
you.
No, and this is great. Yeah, the groups are great. I think it's, you know, because I do have different rules for different people. If I'm at work, while I'm at work, I want all my calls to go to my office phone and my cell phone. But no matter what, if my friends call me, send it to my cell phone. That's with me, my friends, you know, anytime, friends and family, especially anytime, you know, but, you know, maybe the boss starts calling you too much when you're not at work or, you know, just there's some people that you don't socially hang out with a lot that you don't want to talk to on the phone. You can put different rules and just let it ring and go to voicemail. Or like you said, block them and it'll say that this phone's disconnected.
So you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, it rings all your phones, right? What happens if, like, you know, I set it up to send my office phone, but now it's now 5:55 or 4:55 and you get off at 5 and you're about to leave the office and you're on the phone with this guy, but you're, You kind of need to catch the train or the bus.
Yep, great.
All you do is you hit star on your phone, and it'll on any phone that you're on that's connected to Google Voice, it will dial all your other phones, like your cell phone. So if it's in your pocket, you grab your cell phone and start walking out the door, and the caller on the other end has no idea you just switched phones.
Yeah, and I think it is important, like you said, to talk about this, to point out, though, the originating communication has to go through Google Voice. So this is kind of a pain. So, I mean, if you let's say you're being real sneaky about it and you're like, hey,
this is my phone number,
mm-hmm. and then you're not thinking and you call them on your cell phone number, not through Google Voice, they'll get your cell phone number. And then you don't get any of the benefits of Google Voice if it's a direct call to you.
You're going to have to be careful on the outbound. On the inbound, you just give them your number, but on the outbound, you're going to... It's kind of a pain to have to call Google Voice to go make an outgoing call if you're not at a computer to where you just type in the number real quick. Because you basically, in order to call outgoing on your cell phone through Google Voice, you have to call your own number and then put in your PIN and then call the number, which is a little bit out of the way, to be
clunky,
honest.
But then again, maybe if you have just one or two particular people that you're trying to shield yourself from, you know, I can deal with that.
Sure. So another great feature is, so the voicemails we talked about, they were kind of, I mean, they get transcribed. If somebody leaves you a voice message that, you missed a call or maybe you blocked them or whatever, you receive a transcribed text message if you want with the actual text of what the guy said, including his phone number.
Well, but here's what I'm worried about transcription, Mark. I mean, how accurate is it? We all know that like voice to text is usually pretty iffy. I don't know. I mean, it's probably gotten better in the past couple of years, but last time I used it, it was, not super accurate. How is it with Google Voice?
Well, here's what I did. Last night, I called my own phone with another phone and left a message, and I used, slang. We had, games running in the background with noise. Kind of background noise, kind of put it to the test and see what it would do.
I think you said bra in it about... which is our Hawaiian greeting to each other.
Aloha.
Aloha, brah.
I used a little bit of slang to see what it would actually pick up. And you know what? I was fascinated with the way it actually display the user interface and how it does this. Mm-hmm. So what it does is if it's not certain on a word, it'll be a lighter shade. It'll be a gray.
Okay. And if it's like, that's really cool.
If it's pretty darn sure that it is this word that guy said on the message, it'll be black. Like, we're pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. I'll
report that it was very, pretty much accurate. Wow. Some of the slang words and things, it was grayed out. I was like, I'm not sure if he said this or.
Well, you and I joke around because, like I said, we're big Dog the Bounty Hunter fans and we say bra a lot because that's like his brother greeting, it might get confused. I don't think that's a popular enough slang for Google Voice. It probably thinks that it's an apparatus, a woman's undergarment, but. I mean, if it can tell that it might be slang, it probably would gray it out.
It's a good thing you mentioned that. When you hit play, it'll actually show the words and it'll underline what word saying right now. And it either does it now. I should look at this. It either does it now or they probably will in the future, is where you could click on that word and say it was actually this word and they'll get smarter over time.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
So if enough people say, I actually meant to say bra, B-R-A-H, or whatever, exactly. Eventually that slang word will enter the Google's.
Awesome. Awesome.
Language. I guess.
Some of the other cool features that I want to just is conference calling. It's really easy. It's a completely different way to do a conference. So right now what you do, there's two ways to do it. Either you pick up your phone and you call the first person and then you conference in the second person and then you conference in the third person.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way is you use an expensive service like GoToMeeting or something like that and they call a 1-800 number that gets connected. This way, the way it works now is awesome. You just say, call this phone number at like 5:00 PM. And the first person calls and you're talking to them. And then call waiting comes in and you're like, oh, call waiting. That's Bill. You answer that call and you hit, I think, 5. And it just conferences that person into your primary conversation. So as each person calls in, you just answer, say hello, 5, boom. Instead of doing like having to do it all yourself, they come to you. So it's not like this awkward, trying to call each person, I don't know if you've met with our VoIP system at work and stuff. Sometimes you call one person's office to try and conference them in and they don't answer. And you're like trying to hang up on that conference, bringing them in, but not the whole conference call. Cause you just spent 20 minutes bringing in everyone else. it's a huge pain, and I think this will make it a lot easier.
Yeah, in a business setting, you want to set up a meeting or something, you have a three-way conference, four-way conference.
Because we all know how to use call waiting on our cell phones. Sure. And all this is using call waiting, but you just pound five to bring them into the primary conversation as a conference.
That's awesome. So one of the things we were kind of curious, I guess, when we talked about it in episode 9, it was, you know, how are they going to get around this? You know, a lot of the people with mobile phones have what's called like in-networking calling. They can call unlimited to people on their similar network. If it's not in their similar network, they get charged minutes, and they're usually limited to a certain amount of minutes on their plan, like maybe 500 minutes a month or something. Now, Google Voice is definitely not a Verizon number. It's going to be just like a landline style number. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not going to be in network. What you can do, at least on Verizon, I looked at a lot of the plans, and almost all of the plans have a feature where you can add a number to be part of your network that's not in your network. Mm-hmm. And so what you could do is you could add this Google Voice number to your plan, and then all calls from Google Voice would be as if it was in your network. So all calls would be free.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I mean, I have a theory, and I don't mean to interrupt, but here's my theory on how I think one way Google Voice might monetize. I think one way they might monetize is by having somehow working out deals with carriers to have a Google Voice number in network, and then I think the carriers will then just pass that cost directly on to consumers. So let's say if you you can change your plan and muck around with it and do like that. You know, if you're in some, you have like 5 for $5 or whatever, you know, whatever. But like I don't. I just have an existing plan. Now, if they came out with a little feature that said add Google Voice as an in calling number for like $1 a month, or I would even say maybe up to $5 a month, I would probably pay for that.
Yeah.
And then think about it. Then, I mean, I think carriers will do this because if enough people request it, because then, I mean, you don't have to hack around it or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I guess to give you an idea of what this kind of does to the network is if you, for example, if you add the Google number to your Verizon plan and you make all outgoing calls through that number, you can call unlimited all day long to anyone in the United States.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they are in your network or not. So it's really, it's a way of getting around it.
It is, but calling out is a pain.
It is. It is a little bit of a pain. Now, are the carriers going to respond to that and maybe do something like you're saying, work with Google, or is it going to be such a limited amount of people that they're not going to care about it
much? That's what I foresee. I mean, the people that would go through the trouble of changing their plan to get this around so they can select the Google Voice number to be in network, it seems like a lot of work. And I think the number of people that are using Google Voice, and then from there, the subset of people that would be willing to do that is very small.
Yeah.
I think another way they might monetize too is to bring this into the apps suite, you know, maybe some features that the basic accounts don't get. And like, you know, if you can get your own customized enterprise Google Voice set up for, you know, X dollars a month or.
I definitely see this being integrated in all the Google things. Like if you could have a calendar, right in your calendar that you're going to have a conference call and it automatically starts calling your phone and starts hooking people up.
Yeah.
With Google Wave, they can integrate with that. I mean, there's a lot of things they can integrate with this.
I agree.
As well as like their language library, being able to record calls and have people submit corrections on words. Yeah. I mean, that's going to improve their voice to text recognitions, which they need.
Oh, that's all. I mean, the bigger database of voice, you know, voice to text you have just makes it all that better because it's a very hard problem for computer scientists.
So Google Voice is definitely out. It's not like, you know, you can just go and sign up. You do have to get an invite, but they are sending invites. So be patient and sign up. I recommend at least checking it out.
Sign up and hopefully you can invite. I haven't got mine yet. I'm pretty excited.
We're also planning on getting a face-off number. Whenever it does, we'll start advertising our number so you can call in and give us a question or something.
But we don't have one yet. Not yet, but it's definitely in the work. All right, enough of that. That's really exciting. I mean, I think you just had your moment because you've been waiting. You've been waiting for Grand Central for so long and you finally get the chance to use it and talk about it on the show. I think you're pretty set for the rest of the show. Let's go on to our web apps.
All right, what do we got first, Jade?
The first one that I want to talk about is called Vocab Grabber, which you can go to by going to visualthesaurus.com/vocabgrabber. What Vocab Grabber does is you paste some writing into it, and it kind of parses it and gives you some interesting looks at your vocab, your writing style. So, for example, what I did was I put in a Nextutor article that you wrote.
Okay.
I mean, not surprising, the biggest word in the cloud is Linux.
So it kind of does like a keyword analysis?
Yeah, it does a keyword analysis. It breaks it down kind of like by subjects. Like there's geography, people, social studies, arts and literature, math, science, and vocabulary. So you can like filter your results there. Like, oh, you know, vocabulary words. Okay, you use install and data a lot. Science terms, you use Linux, hard drive, backup a lot. You know, social studies, let's get that in there. And from that, it's kind of a cool tool to go and look at your writing style. Like, if you're trying to come off professionally, and let's say your word cloud is showing, you know, a lot of words that you don't think are very professional, maybe you need to try and alter your way of thinking and looking at it.
Cool. So, like, the geography, what does that show us? Like, does it show, like...
your words that sort of are...
Oh, okay.
...in the genre of geography. If like, you mention... development and community, I guess, are the ones that show up here. Some of the other things you can do, let me look at this, is you can see sort of almost like word links. Like, if you can click on certain words and kind of see... like almost these diagrams of a network of how your words are linked together, kind of what phrases you have together. Like, you know, processor, you have a lot of link to like workers, CPU. I see that you're using CPU sometimes with C.P.U. Sometimes you just say CPU.
Oh.
And it kind of groups them together. I think the more you do, like the more words, the bigger article you have, the better it is.
Okay. So a longer article, the more relevant it's going to be. You know, spit out.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, when I click on a word, like downside, it gives, you know, it'll parse it and give me all the examples in the text where you use the word downside. Like the downside of this method actually resides in strength. The downside of this method is that you have to reinstall the operating system and any programs that were installed there is ever corrupted. You know, I mean, it's a way to kind of parse through your words, look at what you're saying. You know, you use Linux in there quite a bit, but yeah.
That's what the article's about. So,
you know, like the word, this is actually really weird. If you look in this article that you wrote, the word hard has a really interesting sort of word net. Like, it kind of breaks off to like hardness, unyielding, semi-hard. It's
was that the hard drive article?
Yes, okay. It was. Yeah.
Did I use like hard drive as one word versus two or anything weird like that? Does it show that kind of thing?
It looks like you use it as two words a lot, but, okay. It's just, again, it's kind of a little bit of a visual tool and kind of an easy parsing tool to analyze your writing. It's not something I would use every day.
So, we talked about WordNIC, which is kind of like a tool that aggregates information about words, and this is kind of like the same thing but a bigger picture. It's like more about the paragraph or the text in general.
Yeah, it's like what is your vocabulary? What is the vocabulary of your writing? You know, it's Vocab Grabber. It chunks through all your words and your vocabulary of your writing and kind of gives you some interesting things about it. Like, the word datum, for some reason, is related to data point in your writing. That's its only relation. Like, a lot of your words, you know, that's why hard drive or hard was kind of the one that had the most links, because it's related to a lot of different things within your writing.
Okay.
So it's, again, vocabulary. I wouldn't use it every day, but it's just kind of I think it's an interesting way to, we talk about a lot, looking and reflecting upon yourself and your work and trying to see, you know, where you're going and what you're doing. And this might be one of your tools that you would put into your, you know, your toolkit of, how can I improve my writing? What am I actually saying? You know, if you're trying to be positive, but you can look at this and know maybe you have like a lot of negative words, you know, things that just seem to put walls in front of you. Well, then maybe you need to try and change your vocabulary, or maybe you need to change just what you're trying, how you're trying to write.
I like their logo. It's got a nice little arm that's grabbing up a little piece of.
Yeah, it's like a little construction arm coming off the R. So visualthesaurus.com/vocabgrabber.
Do you know if they have an API?
I don't know if they have an API.
We're just like API junkies, even though we don't ever actually implement them a lot of the times. But it's like, oh,
you know.
But you know,
I don't know. So let's. Here's a great example is to take something like the what did I just input in here? The Constitution or something like that.
United States Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights. Yep. So let's get the vocabulary for the Bill of Rights. You know, a lot of the words that pop out is law, right, people, you know, witness, the states, jury. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I really am a data visualization geek. I really like to look at data, even if I don't get anything useful out of it. I just like to kind of, you know, see the shape of data and things like that. So I love visualizations like this that kind of spit things out at you.
And if you, so like if you click on the word on the right, it says like, where kind of how it was used and like a little blurb about it. So
yeah, it gives you the definition of it, verbs filled with people, you know, and it's cool.
I don't see an API, but I do see a you can add it to your toolbar. So that makes it a little bit easier to add some.
Yeah, I'm quick sure text you just select it. A bunch of text and hit, you know. But again, like I said, I'm just a data viz nerd. So
cool.
Check it out. Vocab grabber. What do we got next, Mark?
All right, the next one is called Pod Shifter. So I've been actually listening to a book on my iPod. Mm-hmm. I'm not, as have I.
You and I both kind of started doing it again. And
yeah, I don't read a whole lot. I don't know if it's because it's very time consuming, or what. I don't know. I don't really like reading books, but I started to fall in love with listening to books.
Yeah,
which is really the same thing. You're just getting it through a different sense. Yeah.
You know, I've heard that a lot of computer people who do computer work really like audiobooks because, and it makes sense. We're staring at text all day. We're reading all day.
But reading a book feels like work. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, with like Twitter, Facebook, RSS, and just code. I mean, we're staring. Our eyes are getting burnt out. I mean, I'm really interested to watch how our generation will, what will happen when we hit like age 60. Because I would love like a, you know, sweeping throngs of blind people. But I mean, there's a lot of eye strain, and an audiobook is a way to, because I mean, I like a story, I like learning, I love the content of books, but again, same thing, I find reading to be really tiresome. It seems like it's more of a pain than it should be,
right?
And audiobooks take care of that.
So here's what I found with audiobooks is doing mundane tasks like the laundry or painting the spare bedroom or, you know, whatever. You know, hooking up an iPod to an audiobook, I mean, that you'll just paint for hours. You won't stop because you want to get to the next chapter. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Some books are very exciting. And
the information just like absorbs in your head because it's just there with you.
A great thing for audiobooks is, you know, driving long distance. Like every time I drive to Bozeman, you know, it's just an hour drive. I listen to either a podcast or a book, and it just makes the drive fly by. It's like the drive's not.
I mean, I hate driving, but sometimes I wish I had a commute or a really long bus ride every morning so I could get in some podcasts or get in some audiobooks.
So what PodShifter is, it's for these audiobook junkies that just can't get enough. You know, they want to listen to audio, but they want more of it. You know, they want to listen to more content in a shorter period of time.
Well, if I can preface this,
go ahead.
One really cool feature about the iPod is if it recognizes it as an actual audiobook, like if one you bought from Audible or if you do the right conversions, it will allow you to speed it up. And I actually heard Leo Laporte talking about this, and I don't know how much of it is backed up by science or whatever, but you know,
if there's any studies
that crazy science, you know. But he said, you know, he read somewhere that people are able to learn at almost like, I think it was like two or three times the speed that they can visually. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but so like the iPod has the feature to speed up your audiobooks because you can speed it up quite a bit and have the exact same comprehension rate, mm-hmm. which
in
you
fact,
cannot do with.
I haven't seen a study, but I've heard that it can sometimes be even more if you listen to, you know, the whole sentence faster. You comprehend the whole thing a little bit better.
Exactly. So,
so what this PodShifter does is, you know, like you said, the iPod can do this, but not all devices can. And also, the iPod is limited to special formats.
Only
right?
audiobooks.
Only the audiobooks. So, like, if you have just a .mp3, it's not going to work. Yeah.
And you and I listen, I mean, we listen to a lot of podcasts, not just audiobooks. We do a lot of audio content in general.
So what this does is you can actually, you know, put your podcast in here, upload it up. Can you do a URL?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it does. You give it the RSS
feed. You give it the RSS feed, and it will just, and you set the setting of how fast you want it, and it will go in and, you know, go in and re-encode it. to be faster.
Yeah.
Shift it. That's what they use. They shift it and make it go faster for you, and then you can download it again.
But no, actually, if you use it, this is what the best part about it. You give it your podcast URL, the feed for it, and it creates a feed of the shifted MP3 so that you can still subscribe to it in your podcatching software.
Oh, that is awesome.
I totally missed that part of it. Yeah, exactly. Well, it looks like you can just also upload an MP3 or give it the URL and it'll spit out the MP3. But no, it gives you... So like right now, if I subscribe to podshifter.com/120/http://faceoffshow.com/feed, that is the Face Off Show podcast 1.2x.
And it downloads and
shifts. Downloads it. And it's... Yep. Open it and put it in iTunes, your favorite podcatcher, and... Boom, you're good to go.
So yeah, like if I'm gonna give it a try, I've yet to try, you know, speeding it up because I don't have an audiobook format book right now. I have just MP3s. In my next book that I'm gonna read, I'm gonna try it out.
Yeah, I mean, think.
I mean, we did a little test. We did some tests on it, and
yeah,
it,
actually, you know, I mean, we can play it a little bit. Yeah, the examples that they have on the site are, you know, so here's Orson Welles, which, by the way, if you want to talk about people who can read and just are awesome is Orson Welles. But the one thing, you know, if you listen to any Orson Welles, is he has these really long pauses and he can kind of ramble on sometimes. So here's sort of the original speed of a reading of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's.
Okay, so, and this is the best part about Podshifter, is you can do it 1.2 times faster, 1.4 times faster, 1.6 times faster, up to 2 times fast than the normal recording. So here's like, so let's say you just want to speed it up, you want to try it, see, you know, here's 1.2.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man.
See, so, I mean, to me, that's more comprehensible because you get a little bit of a bigger picture faster.
Well, it's undeniably faster, but to me, I mean, I didn't find it more comprehensible, but I didn't find any difference. I had the same audio in a smaller time frame, but I didn't find it less or more difficult to understand.
I could see, though, if you had a lot of pauses and breaks in your speech, you might forget what the sentence was, like what it's talking about. If you're kind of spacing out a little bit.
So here's 2x. You'll notice this.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world is being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's.
So, I mean, it's a lot faster.
That's a lot faster. But again, if you can comprehend audibly. I mean, human voice and language is so complex that, I mean, we're just so tuned to do things audibly that it doesn't, we don't think twice about it. Like that. I could listen to a book and comprehend at that speed and comprehend it completely. I'm totally going to try this because I find it so hard to listen to all the podcasts I want to.
So at 2x, you can listen to twice the content.
Oh,
in the same amount of time. Exactly. So.
And the one thing I did notice, I mean, it had a little bit of a burp. One thing I noticed with my iPod, and I've only done it with my iPod Nano, which is a first gen, so maybe I haven't done it with my Touch yet, which might have a better algorithm. But when you speed it up in the iPod Touch, it does sound a little warbly, a little different. This does a really good job. It doesn't do, you know, the chipmunk voice or anything like that. You know, it's just very fast, very clean. And so, I mean, honestly, if you're a serious audio listener and what you care about is comprehending what they're saying, you don't care about really the quality, you know, if it sounds perfect, if you're into the environment or, you know, if you want to get, you know, a really good feel, if you're really just interested in the content and what they're saying, this is perfect. You know, like when I listen to Security Now, I want the information on it. I mean, it's nice that Leo goes through all the trouble to make it sound perfect, but as long as I can understand it without it being annoying, that's all I want. And this is perfect for that. I can listen to two Security Nows in the time it would take me to normally listen to one.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that it makes a feed and you don't have to upload and download.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would love it if you could just do that, but since it does feeds already, that's even
better. Yeah, exactly. That's a lot. I mean, it'd be nice if they would, I agree. If they let you do it with any audio file, and maybe that's a feature they'll add in the future so that, say, for example, for your MP3 audiobooks, you couldn't do that with this right now, but...
I'd have to download something and do it on my own or whatever, but... Yeah, no, this is a great... I mean, I would at least try to listen to it faster if you want to try to get more out of Mm-hmm. If you're not listening to audiobooks, you might want to give it a try. Or,
Well, see, my problem is when I work, I think the perfect time to work or to listen to stuff would be at work, but I can't listen to stuff. Yeah. I concentrate and work at the same time. I need like sort of, you know, drowning techno music or classical music or something. So when I do sit down to listen to an audiobook or to listen to a podcast, I mean, it's something that I have to put all my energy into, and it kind of bugs me because it's like I want to utilize that time as much as possible. If like I said, if I had a drive in the morning or something, I would be okay because that's some mundane thing I have to do anyways. So this is great for someone like me.
Yeah, I can't listen to it at work. So my time to listen to podcasts is when I drive. Yep. And so I'm limited. I can only listen to so many. If I can use something like this, I could possibly listen to twice as many.
Exactly. So, all right. So actually, in the theme of comprehending faster, we're going to go into our next web app, which is ZapReader. So go to ZapReader.com.
It's all about speed in this episode.
Well, I mean, and one of the things I want to really point out to people is that speed is great, but comprehension is more important. So
definitely,
if you know, these might work and they might not, but either way, don't waste your time reading something that you're not going to comprehend or listening to something you're not going to comprehend. So, you know, if it's not for you, don't do it. So what ZapReader does is you go to this website, you input the text that you want to read, and they claim to like have people be able to read three times faster and with the same comprehension rate. And how they do that is instead of having the big long article with all the text, you hit play and it flashes, it reads each word individually
in one spot. So your eyes don't have to move.
Yep.
Basically
in big text. So it's easy to read. You don't have to squint or it's not strainful on your eyes. And I mean, I'm going to try. I think I mean, I've done a couple tests with a couple sentences and I didn't seem to not be able to comprehend it.
Mm-hmm. And as well as PodShifter, they have variations. You can do a higher speed if you find yourself you're missing words. Mm-hmm. You can do two words at a time versus one word at a time. You slow it down. It's really adaptable to you, and so you can try different levels of speed.
And so some of the tools they have like a bookmarklet so that you can just go to a website, highlight the text you want to read, and click send it to ZapReader, and in one shot you can read it. And again, it's just some of us need to try and squeeze every minute we can out of this. So one of the things I get really upset at myself about is, you know, if I waste time, like if I, you know, start reading an article and then I get bored and I quit, then I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have read that half of the article. But
yeah,
if I can increase my rate of reading or my rate of listening and still retain true comprehension, that's great. That's good stuff.
You know, this also relates, you know, like we talked about just a little bit ago about programmers, you know, straining their eyes, moving all over the page. If you're just in one spot and it's just flashing, it's like lazy way of reading.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of. I mean, you could just sit stare with your, you know, your chin in your hand at the same spot without having to move your eyes. I mean, this sounds silly, but losing your place happens sometime. Mm-hmm. And if someone isn't writing, I mean, we talk about it. I like readers on the web want scannable text. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of like taking all the concepts of scannable text and spitting them into one word at a time right in your face.
Definitely. I mean, like when I tried it, it felt like it was less work to read what was flashing at me.
The only problem is, though, my internal monologue when I read this, it's yelling at me. That's my only real gripe with it. For some reason, I'm like, you know, like, you know.
Because we're used to promotional messages doing
what this basically does,
what it does is it'll show you a word and then flash away for a second and show you another word and flash away and then show you another word. One, you know, we're used to like advertisements or like, you know, movie titles or whatever that do that. So
yeah, exactly. It's like
coming this summer.
Like, in my head, it's just like, the Linux distro you want to. And I have to work that out. But it's just a little quirk in my own head. But
I should mention we did do, you know, the higher speeds and we were able to comprehend what it was.
Yeah,
we didn't do it on a long term basis, but we did try it and it was.
I mean, I never once felt like I.
You're missing words.
I wasn't able to catch up.
Right.
I mean, I think again, it's sort of amazing how quickly our brains can work, and we have these sort of traditional systems of doing it where these other systems work just as well. We're very powerful computers up in our head.
I've actually read some of the articles on speed reading, and one of the things that some of them recommend is to train your eyes to move in a line, even if you don't pause ever, like is kind of what their motto was, like train your eyes to follow it and catch up if you have to, like don't pause word, just kind of line. Like, so basically what this does is just keeps your eyes in one spot. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it just it removes one element of your whole what it takes to read equation. There you go. You know, yeah. Moving your eyes.
That was kind of what I was kind of trying to say there. So yeah, it's a way to read much faster, at least in my trials of it.
Zapreader.com. I'm gonna try and see what we can find out. All right, Mark. So for the rest of our show, actually, earlier this week we interviewed programmer David Walsh from DavidWalsh.name. He's a pretty popular programmer in things like PHP, JavaScript. He's a member of the MooTools development team. Uh-huh. So right now, we're going to play that interview for our listeners. All right, we're here with David Walsh, whose blog about programming states becoming a complete programmer with PHP, CSS, MooTools, and jQuery, and everything else. And he's also a developer for the popular MooTools JavaScript framework. Thanks for talking with us, David.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's a pleasure.
So, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of what you're doing, and some of the things you're working on right now.
Yeah, I have about 5 years now of professional experience as a web developer. I taught myself HTML and CSS and JavaScript when I was 15, and it's, you know, one of those hobbies that sort of stuck with me. Today I have, you know, the usual 9-to-5 job, doing a variety of things from PHP to, you know, basically every part of the project, hosting domains and such. Mm-hmm. Outside of work right now, I have a couple of faces. I have my blog, which I work a lot on, as well as I'm a core developer for the MooTools JavaScript framework. And I think the other notable thing that I'll mention is I am one of the creators of Script in Style, which is a sort of a link sharing, not quite dig, but again, just link sharing with regards to popular articles about JavaScript, CSS, and likewise stuff.
Great. So, David, what do you think was, you know, the most important factor for you to building your subscribers to over 4,000? I mean, Mark and I check it quite often. I think you're up to about 4,800 when we looked last night.
That's a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of people checking your stuff out every day.
Yeah, damn fools, you know. there's a couple of things that went into growing that. One is obviously hard work. Having a blog and posting like I do daily takes a lot of time, so you have to be willing to put in the time. The other thing is quality. Quality and thinking outside of the box, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, a blog that shows you how to change the font family of a span tag in CSS isn't going to pull people. So you really have to focus on trying to do unique things, you know, with the tools that are out there. And like I said, I also post daily, so that's a big way to keep people coming back.
Definitely. Do you think your blog had something to do with, like, becoming a MooTools developer? Did that play a big part?
Yeah, definitely. I think that Aaron Newton, who's one of the creators of the framework, saw what I was doing, said, hey, I really like what's going on. I think that you should try and submit some patches to MooTools or, you know, just sort of share your ideas with the team. So he found me through, you know, the numerous blog posts about MooTools that I had done and sort of brought me in that way. So, yeah, it did play a pretty big role in that.
So, I mean, you mentioned that you post daily. I mean, this is something that plagues me. How do you come up with an idea to post an article every day?
It's actually really, really tough sometimes and really easy. You know, sometimes I'll sit down and I'm like, oh, great, I've got 3 hours to write some posts, and I can't think of anything. And then the next day when I have no time, I've got 10 ideas for, yeah, for things that I found. One of the things that I do is I'll write down an idea when I have it and sort of hang on to that. The other thing is just to sort of keep track of your pet peeves or, you know, just cool things in general that you had to do that day and just share it with everybody. So sometimes it's really difficult to come up with ideas, and other times I'm just absolutely plagued with them. And
so
as long as you write them down, you'll do it when you've got the time.
So working, you know, a 9-to-5 job with, you know, basically a development firm, does that influence a lot of your posts then? It must.
Yeah, it does. with our customer base and the number of customers that we do have and the types of projects that come in, I'm exposed to a lot of stuff. A lot of times that stuff that isn't as enjoyable as you would think.
a lot of good, a lot of bad.
there is a lot of good, a lot of bad. For example, the job that I work at, we don't host our own websites, so we're kind of stuck with, you know, putting customers either on their own internal server or, you know, anything down to economy hosting at GoDaddy. Mm-hmm. So, for lack of better words, I have to put up with a lot, but I also think that I come out of those experiences with a better knowledge of how to make things work.
Yeah, I can see a lot of your 9-to-5 work in your posting. It definitely shines through that you get a lot of your inspiration from that.
Do you write these articles in advance?
Yes. Yeah. So the time frame that I write the articles is sort of given what's going on with my family and my friends and my girlfriend. So, for example, Saturday mornings are always a really good block of time for me. So I'll, you know, pump out, you know, 4 to 5 posts on a Saturday morning, and then I'm set for the week. So I don't stress too much during the week.
That is hardcore.
Just find stuff. It is hardcore.
Do you actually have?
I listen to Slipknot when I write these. So.
Do you actually have a process?
It needs to be hardcore.
Do you have a process in which you go through to come up with an idea, like some kind of a brainstorming tool, or do they just come to mind?
They just come to mind. The other thing that I'll do is I'll keep my eye out on you know, what's going on in the jQuery community or Prototype or Dojo, any of those other frameworks. I'll keep my eye out for stuff, and when I see a nice plugin or something for that framework, you know, the first thing that hits my mind is, oh, hey, how can I port this over to MooTools? So, you know, that's also a pretty big inspiration for me.
I bet. So, I mean, you do a lot of stuff. You do a lot of CSS and PHP and stuff, but what I get from it is you really started to be smitten with JavaScript. What about that language really draws you in?
For me, I kind of look at it as developers waging a war against the browsers.
That's a good way. That's a good point.
That's a good way to think about it.
Whenever I put something together with PHP or JavaScript, I think to myself, all right, how's the user or how's the system going to blow this up on me? So I code kind of defensively. The thing that's great about JavaScript, though, is that I feel like I'm trying to make the browser do something it wasn't meant to do. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful when you can make something animate really nicely, or, you know, change colors or do Ajax in a way that, you know, the browser vendors didn't intentionally mean for things to go. The other thing is that CSS and some of the browser vendors are so far behind on some of the things that you and I think should be basic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And JavaScript's a great way for us to, you know, fix the browser vendors' mistakes.
Yeah, I think the traditional nature of the internet and the websites was very static. You know, you're on a page and now you go to the next page, and I think JavaScript probably breaks that up. Would you agree with that? Kind of.
Yeah, I do. But you also have to make a way to find it you know, smooth to the user and enhance the user experience. So it's a really tough war, but it's one that I love to fight.
Cool.
Yeah, I think I remember. I mean, I kind of remember the first time I saw, you know, something that was really, I mean, I use the term now Ajax, but, you know, it's kind of the generic term for any sort of nice JavaScript that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just remember thinking that it just, I mean, when you have to kind of the first time think about, like, is this Flash or is this HTML? You know, because traditionally all we ever saw in the past was Flash that did anything cool like
right.
that, you know, and it was kind of a pain in the butt back then. Yeah. So I agree with you. That's really cool.
Yeah. Whenever I see something that was traditionally done in Flash ported over to JavaScript, it just puts a big smile on your face. And then the second thing you do is check the source code to see which framework they use.
I see. Yeah, clever.
Speaking of frameworks, why do you prefer, you know, MooTools over other JavaScript frameworks? Like, what's the difference between a few of them?
Yeah, I mean, MooTools is very unique in that it's very modular. It's really easy to implement on your site. I think that the syntax is, for lack of a better term, beautiful. The thing that I do want to mention is that a lot of people get it in their heads that, you know, it's jQuery is awesome, MooTools sucks, or vice versa.
Mac or PC sort of argument.
Right. And it's not the way it should be. I think someone that is, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, just completely smitten with one framework and doesn't put in the effort to understand the other ones, is less of a developer. I really think that you should learn more than one. Coincidentally, I knew MooTools first, and I decided one day, you know, I'm going to try out jQuery. I'm going to see what this is about. You know, I found it to be a really nice framework, but it also got me to love MooTools more. So it's just the way that the syntax is differentiated a lot of the time.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I remember particularly the transition from when Prototype was really popular, and I was sort of stuck with Prototype because I knew it, you know, and it's this sort of balance between when you're a developer, you know, you don't want to learn new stuff because you already know something, but you really should.
Right.
And I remember, you know, I was like, why would you ever use jQuery when Prototype does what you need to do? And it's been around for so long, you know, but now when you look at Prototype, it's like, wow, that's a kind of bloated piece of code anymore. And there's
it's
a lot cleaner
changed.
And a lot smoother frameworks out there now.
Right, absolutely. You know, they're all quality. Each one has their advantages and disadvantages. But, you know, every part of MooTools to me is awesome. So it's generally what I've stuck with. But then again, I'm never afraid to use something else if something else fits the project better.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're in a situation like you, you really need to pick what's better for your customers and not what you prefer.
Exactly. So, you know, if I have a customer with a small budget and, you know, such and such plugin is already made for jQuery, there's not one for MooTools, or vice versa, I'm going to use, you know, what's going to meet the customer's budget, and regardless of whether it's my favorite framework or not. So what you said is exactly right.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you transitioned from, you know, a blogger to a MooTools, I think they call it a super fan, and then to a actual project member? And then if you could share a little bit of tips on maybe if somebody else wanted to go down that route too and become one, a little bit of tips on how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess maybe the better term is fanboy, but...
Good call.
You know, it started out with me using MooTools at work. I needed an animation for something, and our designer was off that day, and I don't know how to do all the Flash stuff. So it's like, oh, we'll see what we can get. And I found MooTools. I'm like, oh, this is great. So once I started my blog, I really wanted to sort of give back because I recognized all the time that MooTools had put into things. When I started my blog, I wrote a lot of posts about MooTools and how to do this with MooTools, and it started to get kind of popular. So, you know, I continued to focus on those posts. And then, you know, it just got to the point where I was getting better and better with MooTools as far as the quote-unquote best practices of the framework and the syntax. And I started creating some really advanced plugins. And, you know, a couple of the Moo developers caught wind of it and said, hey, you know, I really like what you're doing. I think that you should, you know, share your ideas with the team, submit patches and so on and so forth. So I was like, wow, you know, I got recognized for this. So the next step was I taught myself how to use Git and to check out, you know, the current version of MooTools. And I started submitting patches, and they were getting picked up, and like, the team members like, oh, this is really good. Nice job. So, you know, it started out that way. The other thing that I did was I went into the ticket system for MooTools, and I, you know, checked off a bunch of tickets and said, guys, here, you can close these. These are, you know, these are old, or, you know, these aren't real problems. They're more user problems than they are with the framework. So I just, you know, spent a lot of time teaching myself Git best practices, And eventually Valerio asked me to join the team. So I guess if I were to give tips about joining your favorite JavaScript framework, one is, you know, get entrenched with the community, you know, post in the forums or the Google groups to help people out, help people out in the chat. Other tips would be, you know, go to someone from the framework and ask, you know, what can I help you guys out with? What can help me help the framework better? Because all of these frameworks, open source projects in general, they are looking for people, but yeah. They can't always actively go out and ask people, you know, to help them out.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
very true.
It's really on you to, you know, show people that you've got the skill to do it. It's just taking the time to show those people that you're dedicated. And yeah, trust me, open source projects are more than willing to let people help them out.
Yeah, you just got to, help them out. That's a great point that, you know, they're not actively recruiting, but they always want people. I mean, it's an open source project. You want as many people on it as possible.
Absolutely.
So, you've been blogging for a while now. You have a lot of subscribers. What's the weirdest thing that you've encountered while blogging? You know, like a weird comment or an email or even a tweet or something that, you know, what's one of the crazy things that's happened to you?
I can't even explain some of the things that happen when you have, when people know who you are. I've had people, I was out once and I was wearing my MooTool shirt and somebody said, "Oh, MooTools, I love that." I'm like, "Yeah, it's really great." And the guy's like, "Oh, do you read David Walsh's blog?"
No way.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, "Ah, yeah, he's all right." And
oh,
and
funny.
The guy's like, "Oh, no, man, he knows what he's doing," and so on and so forth. And my friend is giggling like a schoolgirl next to me because,
wow. You
know, he knows what's going on. And and my friend finally was like, "This is David Walsh." And the guy's like, "Oh, no way." And, you know, he ended up buying me drinks. And that was kind of weird. But
That's awesome.
That's going to make you feel good and keep on blogging. I mean, that's a motivation right there.
I had the biggest smile on my face because it's like the enemy of my girlfriend is my blogs. I spend so much time on it. And I just had a big smile on my face all night. That's more cool than it is weird, but at the same time, it's still kind of...
No, that's bizarro. I mean, you don't expect to go out to a bar and have someone tell you that you should read your own blog.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, if you could give, one piece of advice to a new blogger on how to be successful, what would that tip be? What do you think?
How to be successful? I guess there's a bunch of little things that I'd say. I'd say find a way to post regularly, whether it's once a day or whether it's twice a week on Wednesdays. If people know when they can get stuff from you, you know, they're going to come back and they're going to look forward to it. The other thing that I would recommend them doing is making sure that the quality is in their post and to not be afraid to post something that's going to get them flamed. I've gotten flamed a bunch of times and it doesn't really bother me. It doesn't scare me to not post something because I think people are going to kill me for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the last tip I'd give, I guess, would be to just have fun with it. You know, every once in a while you're going to get a comment from a complete idiot that's, "Oh, you don't know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah." And, you know, it generally turns out that person doesn't know what they're doing. So don't get discouraged. Find a good schedule and have fun with it.
Yeah, those are some great tips. So one of your, this is kind of a funny question, I think. One of the things we know that you do is you hate the term webmaster.
Oh, jeez.
Why do you hate the term? I think it's funny because you hate the term so much, yet Google uses it as much as humanly possible. Like, they love the term webmaster. So, I mean, why do you hate the term webmaster?
Oh, webmaster makes me want to throw myself on a knife. I can't stand that term. I think, my most popular article, and it actually got made the Dig homepage, but it was 9 signs you shouldn't hire that web guy. And what I said in the post was, if somebody calls themselves a webmaster, they're probably not a master of anything. They might be a master of front page, but yep. Beyond that, it's just, I've never met anyone that had self-respect and thought of themselves as a professional enough to call themselves a webmaster. You know, there's web developer, there's web designer. You know, anything but webmaster is good.
It's kind of an old term too, you know, like the office guy that managed the website back in the day, they just put, you know, on the webmaster, you know,
right,
yeah,
right.
Kind of that.
Yeah, I see like this, I see in my head like this big wizard with like a Microsoft wand that says like, I'm master of the web or something, you know.
I yeah. see it like a 48-year-old guy in his parents', you know, garage or his parents' basement, you know, using front page and mm-hmm. whatever WYSIWYG editor comes with Yahoo hosting and, you know, like I do cool stuff on the web, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's especially when you do commercial web development, you see a lot of customers that will come to you and say, well, no, our webmaster Bill, who is usually a 40-year-old guy in his parents' garage, you know, right. charges us, you know, $20,000 a year to maintain this website that's terrible and has no right. dynamic content or anything in it. And they're usually the people calling themselves webmaster.
Absolutely, you know, and like whenever a customer tells me that their old webmaster charged by the number of pages, I don't know what to do with myself. So if you want to call yourself that, fine, but I just can't stand that term.
I usually use like internet software developer or something like that.
Yeah, make it sound good. It sounds webmaster sounds like Dungeons and Dragons or something. I don't.
All right. So our last question is, you know, what's next in store for David Walsh? I mean, you got any other big projects or anything planned that we should be watching out for?
I am plagued with having 100 ideas in no time to pull them off. So, you know, every other day I'll ping Chris Coyer from CSS Tricks and say, oh, dude, we should do this site. This is awesome. Great idea. And, you know, he's like, yeah, well, let's do it. And then 2 days later it's, oh, that idea was no good. We should do this. So I have a bunch of ideas. Right now it's just working on improving my blog. And the other part of it is some of my pet projects with MooTools. So right now I'm working on Faces of MooTools, trying to get that ready, as well as doing some roundups for the MooTools blog and just trying to communicate better to MooTools users right now. So nothing that's going to change the world, but some things that are going to make some of the current things that I'm doing right now better.
Can you talk about the Faces of Moo? I mean, what is that project?
Yeah, so I'll go, you know, a year without seeing a picture of a popular blogger or, you know, somebody that I interact with a lot. I think that one of the goals with this project is to sort of feature the adversity, or I should say the diversity, of the MooTools JavaScript framework. On the team alone, we have people in Italy, the U.S., Argentina, Austria, Germany,
wow.
The Philippines. You know, and that's just the development team itself. MooTools is used by people of all different languages and countries, continents, everywhere. And Faces of MooTools is just a sort of a way to put a face to the people that are using MooTools. And I think whenever you can put a face to something, it gets people more excited about things, and it lets you feel like you know people a little bit better. So that's my goal with Faces of MooTools. So what I want people to do is send in photos of themselves wearing the MooTools shirts that recently came out. And what we're going to do is we're going to put your face up on the website. We're going to put your website URL up there, where you're located, and just sort of, you know, feature the user on the MooTools website. It's something I'm really excited about.
Awesome. So they can get the shirts from the MooTools website, or is there a link for the actual Faces of Moo project?
I haven't launched the project yet.
Okay.
I have a really good amount of photos, but I do want to get some more before we launch it. But yeah, people can go to mootools.net/merch to get t-shirts, hoodies. I think we have a messenger bag up there as well. So yeah, it's a really fun way to support your framework.
It really sounds like MooTools has a much more community-based user base as opposed to just people using it. I mean, if you guys are launching a project like this, I mean, it sounds like that the community behind MooTools, is you know, very much a community and not just a group of people that use it.
It is. The MooTools community itself got sort of a bad name a while back. I think that the MooTools community, its users are still seen sort of as elitist, and that's really not the truth. So, you know, one of the goals of this project is to, you know, to show that the community itself isn't elitist. It's full of really nice people. I've met a ton of great people in the MooTools IRC help room, where I remember some users coming in just to ask a question, and now it's those same users that are helping other people out. So awesome. There's a lot of great people involved with providing help and sort of making the framework better. So, you know, I really want to reward the community and its members.
Can you tell us a little bit about, like, the direction of MooTools? Like, maybe, you know, MooTools 2, what the next thing's going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of great stuff coming up. We just released MooTools 1.2.3 core, and what that did was that introduced dollar save mode. And what that means is that MooTools isn't going to automatically assume the dollar function anymore. So I know that one of the big gripes that people have had about MooTools is that it takes over the dollar function. Mm-hmm. So if you try and embed jQuery within the same page, you have to use jQuery's no conflict method. And, you know, people really aren't fond of MooTools having to take that over. Mm-hmm. So instead of automatically assuming the dollar function now, we've changed the functionality of the dollar function to a method called document.id. So now MooTools doesn't assume that anymore, so that you can put MooTools into the same page as, you know, any of your other frameworks besides Prototype, and use it without problems. And it's something that people have been asking for a really long time. And, you know, we finally had a chance to put it in there, and it's something we're really excited about. So that's one of the things that's going to change in MooTools. The double dollar function is going to become document.search, so that frees up the double dollar function too. Before I mention the other things that are going to happen, if what happens is when you include MooTools 1.2.3 and later, at the, you know, once the DOM is ready, MooTools is going to say, has the dollar function been assigned to anything? If not, we're going to take it. So it's not like everything is going to break on people. But we did provide functionality to use closers and just make your code a little bit cleaner and compatible with other frameworks. But besides those two things, there's going to be a better class that's going to make creating classes more, you know, it's going to be more extendable, more flexible. We're going to improve the effects library. Everything's going to work off of one timer, so things aren't competing with each other. We're also going to implement the Slick Selector engine, which was created by MooTools core developer Thomas Aylott. It's lightning fast and very flexible. So we're going to use the Slick Selector engine within MooTools 2 to, for event creation and element events as well. So it's super flexible. I'm really excited to get that in there. So those are just a few of the things that you can expect within the next version of MooTools. Obviously, the functionality that's in there is going to be kept. It's going to be 100% compatible with MooTools 1.2 as well. So there's just a ton to look forward to. I'm really excited about releasing MooTools 2.
Sounds exciting. A lot of big features coming. Do you think the future of frameworks is, you know, building compatibility of other, you know, other frameworks? You know, trying to be
interoperability.
Right. I mean, be able to mash, you know, a couple different frameworks in one application, or, you know, the compatibility of them.
Yeah, compatibility is a hot topic right now. One thing I do want to mention is that when you are including more than one library, I understand the need for it. You know, sometimes that's what you've got to do. But having having too many frameworks in your page are really going to bloat the page in load time. So you've really got to be cautious about that. Mm-hmm. For example, somewhere within the Nintendo site, I think they're using like 3 frameworks.
Whoa.
And the page just seems really heavy, and it's got to be really difficult to maintain. So, so my advice would be to try and stick to one framework within a project if you can. But, you know, if you can't, the compatibility mode is there for you to use.
I see.
Cool. All right, David. So our last little bit, we want to do what we call rapid fire questions, where we're just going to shoot, you know, a this or that at you. And you kind of just tell us what you think, which one you'd pick and a little bit about it. So are you ready?
Yeah, let's get the music going.
All right. Rod Stewart or Kid Rock?
Rod Stewart, man.
Yeah, you're a Rod Stewart fan. Mac or PC?
You know, I've turned into a smug Mac fanboy, so I'm going to say Mac.
Metallica or Megadeth?
Actually, I would choose Death between those two. I don't,
no. Git or Subversion?
I like Git quite a bit. That's what the MooTools team uses, and it's really easy to go up to GitHub and, you know, pick information off of a, or, you know, download a project quickly, so I love Git.
Yeah, I like Git too.
Dig or Reddit?
I still have to go with Dig.
Coffee or tea?
I'm not smug enough to drink tea, so I have to say coffee.
Light or dark beer?
It depends on the season. Light during the summer, dark during the winter.
Nice. Good answer. Burger or fries?
Oh, jeez. Burger with chipotle mayo and definite win.
All right. Well, David, thanks for talking to us. We really appreciate it. It was very fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Do you have any projects or anything you want to mention to any of our viewers that want to, you know, find any more information about you or anything that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. My blog is at davidwalsh.name if you like jQuery, PHP, CSS, JavaScript. I really try and provide a variety of things there, so go there and check that out. Of course, mootools.net is where you can get mootools. And, you know, if you're just learning JavaScript and you're looking to get things done, mootools is a pretty decent place to start. It can be tough to learn mootools without knowing some of the basics. So you might want to focus on the basics first, but once you've got a decent hold of JavaScript, mootools.net is the place to go. And lastly, I do want to mention scriptinstyle.com, and that's, again, a community link-sharing website where you can check out really cool articles that feature jQuery plugins, MooTools plugins, controversial ideas on CSS and JavaScript, and that sort of thing. So, you know, those are the things that I'm involved with, and I think that listeners of your podcast would have a fun time checking out.
Awesome. Thanks, David.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
All right. So that was David Walsh. We want to thank David for giving us an interview. It was really fun. We even had a great discussion sort of off the record afterwards when we were done. You know, we were just kind of shooting the breeze, and he's really cool. So I want to thank him for coming on the show. You can get more information by going to davidwalsh.name. MooTools, you can get information from MooTools by going to mootools.net, scriptinstyle.com.
He's also on Twitter. David Walsh blog is his. So twitter.com/David Walsh blog, one word.
Yeah. So, thank you, David. We appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. That was an awesome interview. Thank you.
So we want to remind our listeners, of course, you can subscribe to Face Off by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You know, we talk about Twitter replies. You can reply to the post. Hopefully soon you can leave us a voicemail on Google Voice. We're going to be working on that. But thank you very much, guys, and we'll see you next week.